All right, it looks like we're going.
Okay, well, let's call to order the Thursday, July 24th, 2014 Planning Commission meeting. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Who is ready?
Any comment? Okay, all in favor? Thank you for indulging me, just in case, since I went to the open public meeting training, we can't discuss if we want extra things added in or not, you know, as much outside as you thought we could, so if we have something to add to the agenda, that's our opportunity to do it. Next thing, I'd like to welcome Elizabeth Gildersleeve to our commission. It's nice that we're having a full planning commission now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we want to go around and do backgrounds now. I think it would be good, and then we can do it again when Curtis is here.
I just wonder who's bringing the donuts.
You know, well, we didn't talk about
it. Oh, sorry. That's not what I did either.
It's the new person that always... so I don't know. Background, how long have you been on the planning commission? Anything else? Volunteer experience? I'll go first. I think this is my fourth year on the Planning Commission. Been involved in town in different events, and also, you know, I was on the Park Management Group. Prior to that, I've been on a search and rescue team, Big Brother, Big Sister program, things like that. And I have a wife and two kids, aged 2 and 4.
I'm Dick Ryan. In the valley since '84 with the primary warehouser. I came up from Coos Bay with Warehouser and became their land use manager and managed all the land use issues that cropped up when Tim Hill and Randy Revell began to undo all the stability in the county and help Warehouser through a very long and arduous process of zoning and processing and implementation. And so that was my job here. And I was involved in a lot of committees in that process, the advisory committee for 4 years. It's a 4-year process, Jenna, at the Fall City Elementary School. And served on Title 21 committee for Solomon when she helped redo that very important zone, the zoning code. And involved in the Compass since '92 on the board. Been on the Rural Forest Commission for King County and supervisor for the King Conservation District. Kind of busy. But this particular organization, I'm very proud to be a part of because I live in the valley, I live in North Bend, the Montana Road, and a lot of activities going on over the entire community. I feel like I have an opportunity to kind of give back.
I learn something every time we do this. It's cool. Jim, Lucky, nice to meet you again. Second time tonight. Been here in the valley since 97-ish. Real estate brokerage. And I got involved with this planning commission tied to the GMA, energy-wise. And I find it amazingly ironic that that's come right back up again in our last couple of weeks. That's the gist. Welcome.
Good to be here. I don't know a little bit about me. Well, my name is Elizabeth Gildersleeve. That last name is familiar to many in the valley. Some assume that I have lived here all my life. The Gildersleeve family has had presence in North Bend since 1948, when my grandfather built one of the first homes in the Silver Creek area. Actually, before I think it was even called Silver Creek. It was still unincorporated King County at the time. And my dad went into the military, and I actually grew up all over the place. So I have an experience with many different types of living. East Coast insanity around Washington, D.C. I've lived in Europe, and as well in California and up here. So I've seen what can happen with unconstrained growth, and that has been part of it. But I think what drew me here is the fact that I have a pretty significant background with flood insurance in my professional life. And with the effects of bigger waters coming on, I came and scared the heck, I think, out of the city council here a few months ago with part of our team trying to talk about some of the impacts. This was before they passed the homeowners legislation in March, the end of March. And I realized that I actually have something to offer. As 2017 comes around, there are a lot of changes in the works. And having someone that can tie in what they're telling cities versus what they're telling people from the insurance end and the actual impact on homeowners, I thought I had something to offer. And I'm willing to learn. I love this community. I've lived here now for over 20 years. Thought it was time to give back a little bit. And I want to talk to you sometime, Dick, because I'm wondering if you had any involvement in the negotiated floodplain there. And so call me.
I did.
Okay.
As did my predecessor. Yeah. You know, asked the Navy path. We took half the floodplain on the mill site just to satisfy FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've read some of the original reports that they have at the archives at the U from when they
were talking about that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. In any case, that's kind of, I'm here to learn a lot of it. There's some that I obviously have a lot to come up to speed on, but I'm looking forward to being part of the team.
Cool. Do you remember playing at your grandfather's place when you were a kid?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's a cool picture all by itself.
I actually remember when there used to be a giant tire swing at E.J. Roberts Park that would bounce off a tree there, that we'd try and knock each other off, and the tree's gone now. And I remember when there was water, actually, a moat of water around E.J. Roberts Park, and not just the bridges that are left now.
We'll count on you to keep us all sane.
And I'm on the original street with the boulevard, the nice wide street on 6th Street that didn't get replicated too many other places.
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you for volunteering. Appreciate it very much. And I don't know about everybody else. I continue to learn, so it's not that you come on here with any knowledge, right? It's you gain it as you go. Appreciate that. So, okay, moving forward, can I get a motion to approve the July 10th meeting minutes?
Approved is written.
Motion.
I second that motion.
Okay. Any changes? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comment on non-agenda items. Richmond.
Hi, and I'm Travis Richmond, living North End, 713 Ogle Avenue, Northeast. And I'm pretty excited to see a full planning commission as well. I've been honored to be able to join these meetings for the last 20 months. In that time, I've gone to probably right around 200 civic meetings. I learn a lot from it. I'm nourished. I'm really not sure what I'm doing popping up at all of the meetings on a regular basis, on an ongoing basis. However, it's the right thing to do, and it's just allows me to be vested in the community. It allows the relationships that I have at the parks and the streets and the gathering places to be informed and credible. So thanks for being here and providing the foundation for that.
Thanks, Travis. All right, so our next item on the agenda is zoning regulations addressing low-density residential density and setbacks following the ordinance 1530 that was adopted by the council on July 1st. So we heard last meeting from two council members, Jeannie Peterson and Alan Gottlieb.
Gottlieb.
I messed it up too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gottlieb?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I was looking for it. So I don't know if you want to give a summary or any background, especially for Elizabeth, that will help.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so it was probably been 2 or 3 weeks ago when we looked at the date on the ordinance. So in early July, July 9th, the City Council approved Ordinance 1530, which is an interim regulation that changed the bulk and dimensional standards that new development would be subject to upon an application for a new, basically anything, a new subdivision, but also even just standalone homes. So that is, the process of an interim ordinance is basically the city council has the ability to declare an emergency, adopt an interim ordinance within 60 days, hold a public hearing on that interim ordinance. So they will be doing that at their August 19th council meeting. In the meantime, to create regulations that are permanent, these interims go back to the Planning Commission for evaluation. You guys vet them, discuss them, and ultimately make a recommendation to the council. And so that's the process that you're embarking on. They're still going to do their public hearing, and there still will be a public hearing at the Planning Commission in relation to the permanent regulations that you guys will be providing a recommendation on. So basically, I'm sure you read the packet, but the main changes in the interim regs are the lot sizes increased, both the minimum lot size and the average lot size, and you can see the this from 5,000 to 7,500 and from 6,500 average to 8,000 average size. They reduced the building footprint coverage from the 45% to 35% to 40%. The side yard setbacks were increased from 5 to 8. And there was an increase in the lot width from 40 to 60 feet. And I believe there's some other minor details that we'll talk about as we go. Like the variation that's shown in Exhibit 1, which actually the red line is some suggested language from planning. Your council did come and speak to one more thing. They did remove the maximum lot size from the table. Before, that was not applied to short plats, but it was applied to subdivision, so over 9 lots. Now it would just not be applied at all. Let's see here. Front yard setbacks was increased from 10 feet to 20.
So are you aware of where they got these numbers? I bet that there's probably some logic. Did they share that with you?
They had some information that Lonnie provided them that kind of compared certain cities. We've added to that. So what you have in your packet is a comparison of 4 dwelling units per acre. What I think you guys got to keep in mind is this is just other cities' 4 dwelling units per acre zone. This doesn't represent the fact that that's the only, like, we have only a large zoned area of LDR. Like Kirkland has many different zones, and Redmond has many different zones. So in that 4 DU per acre, this is the comparison. So one thing that Elizabeth, we're doing as kind of a sideline effort, running parallel, I should say, is the comp plan land use chapter. So the land use chapter, we're going to be looking at our zoning, and this obviously guides immediate development. You submit an application, this is what applies. The comp plan, obviously, is the 20-year vision, and, you know, you're familiar with that. So what we're looking at with that process is, you know, the actual overall zoning of the city. Do we need to create new zones, amend some zones, so that's part of the process that the Planning Commission was embarking on. We've since pulled that off the table to deal with this issue because it was a top priority because of the emergency situation that they declared. So that's where we are. We are eventually going to bring that back to run in parallel because they really do somewhat ultimately affect each other, and the conversation is right on par with each other. So, but for tonight, we thought Planning Commission asked that it would just be this topic. So tonight, it's more about, we have this topic scheduled for about 4 meetings, just roughly right now. I think our last meeting, we spoke just about schedule. So this is the first meeting where we're going to just embark on discussing these, or the interim ordinance, how they affect, what kind of questions you have, what kind of information you'll need or not need, and kind of flush out some of that from you. And then what we'll do, one thing I want to probably discuss with the Planning Commission tonight and hopefully make a determination on is, when do you feel you want to have public input? Sometimes it's, you know, it's good to have it early so you have that as you go through your deliberation process, but it's also key to have it at a point where you're clearly have the information in time to evaluate it and absorb some of the information. So with that, do you have a preference on how you'd like to go about tonight?
I do, but okay. Before we get into it, thank you first, mm-hmm. and why don't we talk after we figure out what we're doing tonight, if we can determine public input.
Okay.
Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on this topic before we start?
Yes.
Okay, so you know.
Before we start, no, but I would appreciate being allowed to engage in the discussion. I have
sure.
significant issues with it, the technical issues with it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I don't have an issue. So from my point of view, at the last meeting, I asked for the document, which you all have as part of your packet, as a memo from town leader on July 16th, of your average lot sizes and houses. The reason why I wanted to get an understanding of what was being built and at what size is to put it together with our setbacks to determine what is the minimum lot for today's home and do these proposals meet it. But not just meet it, if it actually works with a lifestyle or what we need for our own personal space. So I think once we can all agree on what size lot we're looking at, that meets all these setbacks, front, side, and back, then we can also talk about what land is left that's going to be on that zone if it meets our densities and what way, tying back to our land use. We can also understand, is that lot sufficient enough to not warrant a park requirement or to pay to offset a park requirement? We can talk about low-income housing, if that's a need for, you know, all of that fitting together, but I think it all pivots on what size lot we're going to have, and that can then impact everything else downstream. I don't know what else there is. There's roads, parks, you know, I don't know what else we might want to look at further down. Does that sound like a reasonable strategy to first do that?
That's why we're looking at it.
Okay. All right. So if I may write down some numbers, and I am not a math whiz, but you guys hopefully can help me with that. So what I did was take the four different average lot sizes and the four different average house sizes and came up with the average. So if you have that memo, average lot was 7,063.25 square feet. The average home was 2,917 square feet. So to make that easy for me to do math, I figured on a 3,000 square foot home. So a 3,000 square foot home measures about 40 by 75, which you can move it in any direction, but that comes out to 3,000 exactly. This also doesn't necessarily include a garage, but just for simple numbers. So based on the tables, if we were to add a 10-foot side, not an 8-foot because I'm using each numbers, 10-foot side setbacks on each side, and then Jenna, It didn't say a minimum rear yard setback, but on page 10 in the 18.10.040 Bolton Dimensional Standards, there is a single-family dwelling's minimum rear yard setback of 25 feet.
Yeah. What page are you on that?
10.
That sounds right. I just wanted to... Yeah, they didn't change that, but that is the rear yard setback.
Okay, we have a 20-foot front proposed. So that would equal a lot that's 60 feet wide by 120 feet deep. Which equals 7,200 square feet. If you change that to a 15-foot side and keep the same front, the same rear, that's 8,400 square feet. So that I want to put down so we can have a basis of discussion to determine if 8,000 square feet is sufficient in the proposal or what we would like it to be.
It gives us 10,000 square feet to play with.
Or whatever we determine.
A question on the impact of this. Am I remembering correctly that there is a limit on how many floors up they can go?
There's a height limit. Yeah, there's a height limit of 35 feet average. Measured to the average.
Your building envelope is not reasonable dimension. 3,000 square foot house, 50 by 50 would be more of a reasonable dimension. Nobody's 75 foot. And that does include the garage. You've got to include the garage.
You said, I'm sorry, what would be a...
A lot of, our houses are either 45, 50, or 40, 45, or 50 feet dimensionally. Those are the widths. And then they average about 50 feet deep. Some of them are, you know, those the depth, it ranges from 42 to 60. But
so 40 wide and 50 deep is 2,000. And 50 by 50 is 2,500?
Well, yeah, 50 by 50 is 2,500. That's the footprint.
Does that include the garage?
That includes the garage. Yeah. Which you have to include in the analysis.
Okay. So some things that... aren't in there, like landscaping, front gardens, trees, patios. Is there a 10-foot porch? Or
we allow porches to encroach into the front yard setback by... Porches may project in the front yard area is not more than 5 feet.
And is there a minimum depth? I thought there was.
And it would be the minimum. You hit the front yard setback, and then you can go 5 feet beyond that for the porch towards the road.
What were we looking at? Was it cottage or something else that had a minimum porch?
We have that for all homes now. In the design standards of the residential, we have the 6 feet.
Is that really, it's interesting to know these figures, but it's really important to know this type of detail. I understand what size of lot we're using. We have 7,500 square feet or 8,000 square feet on average.
this case, it was 7,000.
Whatever goes inside that, we'll meet the setbacks, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Either seeing the story or tell the story, or the project developer proposes. But the size of the lot, it seems like we're expanding the lot size by about 10,000 square feet.
Expanding it by or expanding it?
Up to. We're going to, I look at expand a lot as what's the additional cost of real estate, both to the developer and the buyer. Now we're looking, I roughly threw out maybe $10,000 additional cost to the larger lot. It's gross dollars. I don't know what that means.
I think it's hard, yeah.
Times four. By the time it gets sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on a number of different.
So larger lot size, does it or does it not allow for projected growth to occur? Is it gonna change the economic dynamic of the neighborhood? It will improve, I think, the more open feeling. We'll get us back to that. But does it also put a burden on the economic ability of people to pay for it?
So I was trying to just sit and listen tonight, but you just brought up my issue. I don't want to sound like venting, but what I feel like is someone drove through a neighborhood and didn't like what they saw. And instead of really deciding what they didn't like, they're focused on the lot size. It's the wrong place to focus, in my opinion. So we're going to go dancing down the road and decide a perfect lot size for our neighborhood, for our North Bend, and then hand it over to the developers to figure out what the market will buy with that lot size. If I allow 3,000 square foot lots and there's a market for the house that fits on the 3,000 square foot lot, people will build it and the buyers will come. If I make 7,500 square feet my minimum lot size, there's a certain house that fits on there, and there's a certain price to go with it, and there's a different market. So as much as we've talked about different income, different cost, low-income housing, all the way up the chain, it feels like we're focused on the wrong thing. And I don't know where to go other than just follow the council's lead and spend months and months and months doing this dance. I'm willing to do it, but I
remember it took us a year to define rural. Sure. When Eric came in, the answer was rural. Was rural was what you thought it was.
There's a cow within sight, right? That's the answer.
So
Jenna,
but the idea for this, as I understand it, I don't have any direct information from anybody, but like from what I read, someone said we're getting away from rural. This is not a rural configuration. It's more urban.
That's one thing I think you guys might want to think about is instead of trying to pinpoint numbers, I think first you need to step back and think, first of all, what is your vision? What is it that North Bend wants to be? And then what is rural? And is rural, because when you go down Maloney Grove right now and you see a one-story house on 2 acres and kind of pasture type land, that's rural. That is usually unincorporated King County feel. Those areas now are being incorporated into a city, and a lot of the city standards are to provide infrastructure like curb gutter sidewalks, things that are more urban in nature. So as I was hearing the conversation about wanting to stay rural, I thought to myself, well, what does that mean? Because as we approve cottage housing between North Bend Way and Cedar Falls at a density of 8 DUs per acre, when those homes are built, all those trees between those two rows are coming down and homes are going up and they're going to be pretty tight. That's a pretty defining character of which is not rural. So I think the important part about hitting your numbers here to me, first of all, is kind of looking at your zoning, really taking a look at what 8,000 square feet, because one of the neighborhoods that's been discussed as feeling not rural actually meets these, and that's your, that's actually maybe homes where the average lot size is 8,000, and actually the, some of the setbacks are in more in line with what you have approved. So as a planner, what I see is the look and feel between 6,000 or 6,500 to 8,000 doesn't really change that feeling of production building going into what was pasture lands. And so that, you know, that's what the reaction we're having now is we're seeing the pasture lands turn into neighborhoods. And so some of the things that you need to weigh when you're thinking about this is, like, the Mayview homes, they don't have the open space that Cedar Falls has. So Cedar Falls has smaller lots, but more shared open space that's visible from public realm and where people congregate and get to know each other, where Mayview Homes is more of a neighborhood where the size is on the lot and people get their backyard space and that. So it's a different approach. And
streets are broader.
Huh?
Streets are broader.
No, the streets are actually the same on those two. Streets are the same.
Sidewalks.
Same. Those were built to the same street standards. And you should go through your streets and drive and see what speeds you drive when you're driving on a wide road and what you're driving on a narrower road and try to figure out what feels good and what doesn't. But right now, obviously, those two were designed to the same size and width. But that's something to consider is as you look at this, is it's not necessarily, you know, Mayview Homes actually is the 8,000, and it feels pretty similar to Cedar Falls.
So would you, taking that thought with the size of Mayview, and I, because I didn't listen to the very first iteration from council of why they thought this was an issue, it was kind of, I think, a small group of them meet with the mayor, and next thing you know, we've got this order we've got to deal with. So I don't know how much discussion, explanation there was about.
Some of the important things I liked from that conversation, Jeannie was saying, so we have 600 some odd homes approved in the process, and they're all going to be built to the current standards. But there is nothing for the rest of the market that wants a little bit of a yard. And so this provides some kind of diversity is what they're looking for in the housing market. It's something that when you come from Seattle to Issaquah or to Snoqualmie, and you're looking for the larger lot, you go to North Bend, but you're not seeing it, and you expect it here.
And I would say this to that. The developer's not stupid. If they can build on smaller lots, they'll build on smaller lots. If they can build and make a return on their investment on a larger lot, they'll come back and say, you know, we don't actually need all these lots. How about we make them twice the size that I could put them for? So there's this whole dance that happens much more instantaneously than us going through and changing the code.
That's one part of it. But if you look at these standards and these sizes, where is that buyer going to go except unincorporated King County?
But this is, I truly don't mean to be argumentative. This is, maybe you can chime in on time. What we're looking at on paper here is 5 years from now. And between now and then, a builder might, developer might have the ability to build a certain density. But as the market evolves and they start pulling building permits, they're going to adapt to whatever they know they can sell. So our idea of making bigger lots as a minimum doesn't do anything other than drive the price up for the finished product.
Tuesday, I think you guys are both hitting very good points. You're hitting diversity. One thing North Bend does not have right now is a diverse zoning scheme for residential. We have basically two zones, a cottage zone and an LDR zone. So that's one thing to consider, is that what we want? With that, then, I think it gets to what you're speaking to, which is it depends a little bit on the builder and what their product is. Some, like Mayview, chose to do 8,000 square foot homes, where Polygon, or 8,000 square foot lots, where Polygon chose 6,500, and they would have actually done less if our our average wasn't that 65. So, as Gene was saying, providing that variety of product in our land use options is a good thing, and it'll attract probably a little bit of diversity in builders, too. But that's one thing we haven't had. We had everything zoned. And even our cottage might be a little bit, you know, bulky.
So is the proper place to talk about these zones that we have in land use?
When we go back to the comp plan. Like, what you're going to do with this is establish what a new development coming in today is going to get vested to. Meanwhile, you're going to be looking at your zoning map, but as you know, you can't change your comp plan more than once a year, so the earliest we can change that comp plan is May of next year, 2015, because we approved it in 2015 this year. So you have some time to work on the zoning questions. Meanwhile, you kind of got to take this issue up.
So larger lot size. And we're also, I thought we also have to hit some density target for GMA purposes.
What we have is we have targets that we're given. And we're confident we'll run whatever you guys end up deciding. What we're going to do is a capacity analysis, but we're pretty confident that what's here will still yield our target. So we're not concerned that our targets
so
won't be.
So four lots per acre gives us a density that GMA is looking for. The lot size determines if we have land left over to dedicate for some common open space.
Right.
Or if we.
GMA is going to be covering the whole city, not just the particular zoning, right? It's a density population.
All you're doing with the Growth Management Act is you're basically given a target, population target, new housing target.
Because most of our zoning is LD4, LDR, because 4. That's why I'm going there. If we had a multiple zones, we could probably hit the target and go past it with smaller lots and other types of developments. We're putting all our eggs into one suburban basket that's 4 lots per acre. So we go larger lots means we're going to be getting back some community open space. We're going to be charging more, or it's going to charge, it's going to cost more to own a larger lot. But people may or may not be willing to do that. I don't live around. I live near Cedar Falls. I enjoy riding my bike through and watching it go. I don't see an awful lot of people using those playgrounds as a common area. They're there, but I don't see that happening yet.
I think that proves out everywhere you go. There'll be some.
And there they are.
But if you asked each one of them, would you like to have another 50 square feet in your backyard? They'd all say, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm struggling with this whole thing that we're being asked to do. I'm really struggling because I feel like we just got started with what we worked on 10 years ago. I don't want to beat a dead horse. There's a part of me that wants to go and say we've spent some time on this and we recommend back to the city council, don't change it. That's part of my, what is it we're asked to change? Are we just asked to just go back through it and review it? Or are they saying we need to fix this and this and this? And I've only heard so far we need to have bigger lots. I haven't heard. That doesn't fix any problem I've heard about.
Well, with densities, you have more traffic on the roads, you have more wait times at lights, you have more store deliveries to address that local demand, you have less water drainage, for lack of a better term. So, you know, there's possible more flooding that can come. So all those things you could deem are part of the emergency and the risk to what they specified in the ordinance. I don't necessarily like in the process of how it's presented, but it's what it is.
You know, we haven't done what I feel is the result of this is not necessarily a big change in our overall density. I mean, what's probably going to change is anywhere there was a opportunity to work with the developer to get some open space that might not be per code, like we have we've had wildlife corridor questions and things like that. Those will probably go away because the need will go into the lot size. So I still think you're overall going to hit around probably 3.8 to 4 views per acre. It's just you won't see any extra, I would think. But again, I haven't.
There's so much open space that surrounds us within 5 miles of wherever we live in this community. I don't feel that I don't have a need to have additional park space on my street. I can walk a short distance and have thousands of acres available to me. So I don't feel like that. If I was in a more urban area, that's where I'm looking for open space to be created because I can't get to it.
That's a good point, but I think one thing to think about and one thing that enriches and holds your value of your property when you do live in these new neighborhoods is connected open spaces. You think of bridal trails. You think of some of the places that you can actually move through the city. You think about our corridor here where you have a trail. A really well-designed city, a pedestrian can move through comfortably through open spaces that aren't necessarily like having to necessarily walk down North Bend Way. So you do want to bring the reasons why everybody moves out here is the open space. So you want to sprinkle those through your town cleverly so it doesn't impact investment and it doesn't necessarily limit what your goals are for your city. So you can strategically do it. But.
Sorry, I just want to give John a chance.
I have just a couple brief questions. One is on Jenna's point on the open space issue. We looked at Tanner Falls specifically because we have a plat there that's been proposed. And if we disregard the open spaces that we had planned for and just increase the lot size into those open spaces, we lose 10% of lots with the new regulations. If we take those open spaces into account, we lose 25% of lots. So, that's a really significant number. We also looked at another property we have, and we believe that overall loss is about 20%. We looked at three different properties: Myers Ridge, Tanner Falls, and the annexation property we're working on. And the number is pretty consistently 20% reduction in density. So that is what it is, in my opinion. On the value issue, a lot that's 7,200 versus a lot that's 8,400, that lot's not worth a dollar more unless I can build a bigger house on it. So when we increase the size of the lot and increase the side yard setbacks, we're saying we're going to put that 50-foot building envelope just on a bigger lot. And therefore, the value of that finished home is going to be just exactly the same as the value of a finished home, even on a 6,000 square foot lot. My customers don't it'll be easier to sell the slightly bigger lot, but in the end, they're going to be worth the same. So the guy that's really being hurt here is the family that's owned land for them because their land value is being reduced.
Yeah.
And I'd also argue all of the ULID 6 members who now have 20% reduction in density are paying more for the ULID proportionally than they should be.
Good points. When you're talking about parks and our need for them, there's a lot of variety in our community. Being a parent of young kids, one day they're going to grow up and want to play a football game, and where do they go to do that? What park is big enough that they can get the neighborhood kids to go and do those things? So I think there is still some need for that in the community, but yes, avid hiker and appreciate what we have around us at the same time. So I think, our job is to accommodate that. And the reason why I'm writing up setbacks up there is because if I think about having a dog, having a grill, putting a play set up in my backyard, where does that all fit in and how much room do I need for that? And so if we're going to have a diverse market of homes, then we want to think about it in a family size setting, you know, what are the things that you do there? Do you have a bounce house? Do you have one of those 30-foot wide circular pools that you can get at Ace? So how do you put that in some of these lots? I just don't know.
There's an evolution to use your story of family. I mean, you think about it. You know, individual has a space. There's a marriage or whatever, and now they're together. They need a bigger space. Now they have Johnny number one. There's a bigger space. So there's got to be a step up evolution. And if you start off saying that a minimum lot size is 7,500 feet, then you just skip three of those steps before they can even think about moving to town or at least moving into a new house.
I hear you, but I think you're missing the majority of the city, which is already being built under the current zone. So the plot.
Is there a note of that?
According to the friends that I have that have moved into Cedar Falls, no. But that's anecdotal, right? You know. So, if Jenna asked me, and what do I want North Bend to be? It's a little bit larger lot size. It's that rural feel more than an industrial city. I don't want necessarily the traffic that you have up on the ridge or in Issaquah nowadays, unless we build more roads that can handle the capacity. So.
And let me throw this about Snoqualmie Ridge. We don't have, I don't know how many acres of Snoqualmie Ridge.
2,000. Well, one was 2,000. Snoqualmie Ridge 2 was both together. Double that.
Okay. Total is?
About 45.
Okay, so we don't have 4,500 acres to plant. We're never going to be Snoqualmie Ridge. Can't happen. And so, because that keeps coming up for people. They go up there, oh, we don't want that. Well, it's never going to happen because we don't have that much land inside the city to play the game with that much planning. So we're talking about, to John's point, a number of privately held chunks of dirt that might come online as somebody could live there 5 years from now. And we're saying to them, we're not sure we want that to be like. It's already outside the city that most people would call the city.
And truthfully, you shouldn't compare yourself to Snoqualmie. It's a master plan community that was negotiated. The park standards were negotiated. You have pretty much your largest lots have already been developed. The only way you're going to get 100-lot subdivisions now is when people combine parcels. And there's really only a few areas down in the Maloney Grove area left even combined to get to that 100. So you're going to see
within our current urban growth boundary.
I'm talking about right now when you look at
between the rivers.
This is not in the city limits. This is, okay? There's opportunity here for people to combine lots, parcels, I should say, and create a subdivision of upwards of 100. Otherwise, what you're going to get is the 24 to 40 lot subdivision.
Up on the other side of Meadowbrook?
This is already vested. This has just a small bit of residential out here. So my point to that is your park standards and things, we require 5% of any subdivision to include that space for parks, unless you can't get to a quarter acre park, and if you can't get to a quarter acre park, we allow you to do a fee in lieu. So anywhere right around 24 lots, I think, doesn't get you to that quarter acre because it's not a sizable park to build. So that's part of, you know, what you're going to start seeing is those 20 to 40 lot subdivisions versus the Cedar Falls or Sigali or Byron Platt.
So if you take that, I'm still struggling. Who do we talk to? City Council's got this and they're on it. If they were to understand that on a parcel by parcel, 10, 20 acres, whatever it might be, out into the next 10 or 15 years, if they understand that these chunks of land can only be really, even under current code, can only be modified into a certain number of lots, it seems like that kind of makes the point that we don't need to spend so much time defining how big is the lot.
Well, I think what they're asking you to do is a good question. I mean, when you look at the comparison of other cities, just four dwellings per acre, you know, the 75 to 8,000 is right on par with that. Okay. Now there's strategies as a planner that I would, you know, like one reason why we've allowed the front yard setback and the porches to encroach into that is to get the living space closer to the sidewalk and to allow bigger backyard. So we actually push the house forward to allow that bigger backyard vibe, and that's what we have been told from Cedar Falls is what people like most is you can't find a backyard of that size on those lots in other cities. And I don't know, maybe John would know more about that, but that's what I was told by the Cedar Falls why it was selling so well. The backyard is larger than comparable lots in other cities. But so as you look at this, I would say look at this as your 4 VU per acre zone, and for that, it actually, there's some tweaks that we need to discuss, but it works. Now, the next question is, do you want to have other opportunities to get to some of the questions that you're asking, which is that, you know, evolution of first-time home buyer, renter, first-time home buyer, you know, sizing up, and then sizing down.
Yeah,
because there's a whole other generation of coming back.
Yeah. If it's not there in the first place, that cycle doesn't start. Yeah. It never gets back the other way.
I think even just for our sanity's sake, to have a zone that fits what's currently on the map and being built should be applied to it, and then this is a zone that applies to other areas that are left over. Yeah. You know, that just maybe something I like.
It seems like this is almost trying to fix a problem that hasn't been fully addressed in terms of looking at what the overall look of the city will be and any additional zones that need to be put into place. So if you don't have a vision of where you want the city to go and what you want it to look like, and you haven't addressed whether or not you need to add these additional zones, fixating on this one as being a potential issue doesn't seem to be really viewing the whole picture.
Well, I think, you know, previously the comp plan has been updated over mm-hmm. the years. So the vision in your comp plan was 4 dwelling units per acre. This was the zone established. I think what's happening now is you see some growth. And because you see growth and some change in the look and feel of the community, people are now asking, well, wait a minute, is this really our vision? Now the questions pose at the same time that you're reviewing your comp plan. So it's the perfect time to say, hey, does this vision still align with our current vision 20 years from now? So I think what we're actually embarking on is that question.
The challenge is because our vision is the rural city, what does that mean to each person? A rural city is very different than, you know, do they really fit together and how do you make that work? So I've always, you know, looked at this one LDR zone with this residential thought. When I look at our city as a whole and I think about how I want to do multifamily and maybe allow that more in different places, maybe I want to up the height limit. I don't want us to just be a bedroom community. I want to have commercial spaces, you know, so that's where land use comes into and we can have that discussion. For LDR, though, and I'll send this reference out. So over 60% of Seattle's land area is taken up by single-family zoning. There are three categories for single-family zones. There's a square foot of 5,000, 7,200, and 9,600 square feet. If I was to come to North Bend and I didn't get 9,600 square feet, I'm confused. Why do you have smaller lots than the city of Seattle?
Because they're half the price. That's why you come out here.
Well, I think you guys are a good example of why you have both. You want the larger lot, and potentially somebody else, whether it's a family retiring, they're in their 70s, they don't want to mow a big yard or whatever it is. There's a difference of opinion across the board, and so I think, you guys are both bringing up great points, and what in the end, I think the solution you're going to find is you're going to want to provide that diversity.
I think the next meeting when we go back to land use, there will be a motion for another zone and to define that with higher density.
I agree. I think we should go into LD3, LD4, LD5 and position them in a way inside the city where we're not having to go to the uplands to find a larger lot. Be outside the city, but find a state-sized lots where John can build a 4,500 square foot home for people who are looking for a larger lot.
And still a lot to Bartell.
Go ahead.
There's a community that's 2 acre in North Bend called the Forest Homes. Mm-hmm. And you know, those are really nice lots. Those feel like estate lots. They're big lots. And I would totally agree that it's, you know, for a town like this to have one zone mm-hmm. residential of LDR4 is kind of silly. There ought to be one that's L2E2. I mean, you take this, go furthest east and say that there's your L2, that's the furthest east, and then the closer you get to town, you get to the L5. Like that.
That's the most exciting thing I've heard all night.
See, and I think that's why you're going to find that this you have to address it because you have people that want to progress in their investments now versus wait for the full year that it's going to take to amend the comp plan. So you still have to address this, but in the end, the conversations are parallel. So they're, you know, good timing, really.
So we're not looking for action on this tonight, but you're wanting a good direction to go on. And if I'm going to look at a minimum lot size on 10,000 square feet, so I don't know if anybody else wants to suggest something different.
So 10,000 square feet, that's 3,000 feet left for within an acre, 3,000 left roughly for streets, roads, probably no parks.
No parks.
Not looking for park.
Parks in your backyard.
Okay. And you're thinking that's a minimum. So where's the starter house?
Different zone.
1950s?
Different zone.
Now, think through, though. You do want to integrate people. And the, you know, zoning, so you put all this type of people over here and all that age of people over there, so...
So this is what's hard, and I don't know the better process. If we were to look at, I don't know if it's Redmond's code, where you have the lowest density, there is a low-income exception where you can create higher density for low-income or different type of housing within that same zone. It's more complex than I'm prepared to delve into.
Where was it? South and west of Cedar Falls. Community. There was a neighborhood there that didn't have any fences between the properties. They had territorial views between the residences. I'm not sure exactly what that community was called. But it's
where?
What it was south and west of Cedar Falls community right now. They had some water issues. They had creeks running through and their property get flooded every now and then. So they didn't build fence barriers between property lines. They just had their homes.
Oh.
And the feeling in there was extremely idyllic because it was almost like a neighborhood that trusted each other. They didn't have barriers between the lots. Kind of eliminate your neighbor feeling.
Yeah.
It was very much of a rural, and yet it was 4 lots per acre. It just went bigger because you didn't have fences. And you can't legislate that into covenants not to have fences, but they agreed not to do it because mm-hmm. they wanted that feeling and it worked.
Yeah.
I grew up in a neighborhood like that.
You know, thinking through the pros and cons of a size like that, from my perspective as the person implementing it, is every day I sit down with a developer who has one job and the citizen or the people that are going to live next to that new neighborhood that have a different concern. And in the end, because of some of the flexibility in where the land can go, there's ability to negotiate solutions. And when you take away any element of that extra space to negotiate those solutions, whether it's a buffer that might not have been regulated, now what's happening is the developer is going to come in and design right to the code minimum. And I'm going to have to legislate to the code minimum. And when the person comes in that's concerned that they now are going to lose all the trees that were on their backyard but are on the adjacent property. There's no more room for, hey, you know, what about moving the park over here? Or maybe we, instead of building a park that has another play structure that everybody, you know, doesn't maybe think is going to get used, what if we create a great trail corridor that connects to the new neighborhood that has a view park overlooking the river? And all of a sudden now you can kind of create some solutions that are not always foreseen if you just regulate to, hey, this is the biggest we can get. And that's what I see as the challenge on going to regulating everybody to the largest personal space. Because there's a lot of reasons why we work with the investors and developers into solutions that work for them, because it's got a pencil for them. And but we also want the citizens that are going to live next to these new neighbors and neighborhoods to feel good about it. So it's a balancing act, and that's the hard. That's what's kind of getting restrictive when you take away that extra tiny space that we have to play with in that process. In my opinion, just to, you know.
Generically, you're talking about open space within a plat that you don't have anymore.
Yeah, space that maybe, you know, I mean, when push comes to shove, whatever's black and white in that code, if the developer doesn't want to do it, that's what's going to get, you know, on the board. But there are win-wins that happen every neighborhood,
sure.
You know. We're actually dealing with them right now. And like you see, and I don't want to talk about individual projects, but we're trying to solve problems for concerned citizens on Cannon. To do that with them, I can guarantee you, it's working with a willing developer. It's not working with black and white code.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah.
And that's where that relationship and that aspect of urban planning has to function.
I hear you.
Yeah.
My concern is, how do we address the adverse impacts to floodway areas, sensitive environmental and critical areas, city streets, and public safety?
Excuse me.
You know, that's just what it says.
Yeah, where'd it come from?
That's the ordinance.
Yeah, where'd it come from?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you're, okay, so floodways. You can regulate, you have areas.
That are important.
You have areas right
not,
now.
Not of this.
So this is your floodway map. Like, I believe Snoqualmie's entire floodplain is 1 acre lots. You might actually know more than me now, but... So here's your city's floodplain map. Here is the blue is floodplain. Pink is floodway. So, like, for example, if we're looking at zoning, you got lots down here that's in the floodplain. The community, our insurance rates will go down for citizens if we restrict the amount of growth in these areas. So one strategy for 1 acre lots or 2 acre lots is right here in the floodplain. Perfect solution. Which kind of gets to that, at least the floodway one. And same with sensitive areas, sensitive environment, critical areas. I mean, those are all pretty
right.
much regulated.
So that's what I'm confused. It's not not appropriate at this point in time to create other zones or densities, right? So when we get back to land use, when we can talk about that, we can... you know, entertain more things. I'm just thinking about to address what the city council has asked.
Yeah, I mean, there are two different processes. Right now you are looking, you have a zoning map that all the yellow is LDR. So right now anybody walking into our office, including your existing residents, like an example today is we had somebody who wants to add on to their house. The change from the 5 foot setback to the 8 foot setback has now made them it very difficult for them to add us a family room on. And so these are some of the things you're going to have to consider as part of, you know, do we want to talk about existing homes that were built to different setbacks and now as they go to adjust their plans, grow, you know, so those are, you know, but that's what you're dealing with now.
I just threw Aunt Betty on the street.
So do we have to do this as LDR? Why can't we do it in a different name?
You have to, right now you're dealing with LDR because your zoning map is LDR. If you wanted to, you have to change your zoning map to create a new zone. Yes. Yes. But let me think this through, because your process.
This would be much easier.
If what?
If we had another zone to play with.
So your land use designation is residential. So a rezone does not require a comp plan amendment. So in theory, there could be actually a rezone. No, because it would be...
Let's say if it doesn't change the underlying requirements, it's just a name change. That now you're R4 instead of LDR.
It's still part of your comprehensive plan maps. So you have to amend that, you know.
But in our land use chapter, that would be fine to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. That's where you would do it for sure.
So, correct me if I'm missing something. The flood maps and our submissions to various insurance providers, i.e., FEMA, is new stuff, like in the last few months, right?
The updated map hasn't been adopted yet, but
right.
It's pending.
Pending, like, how soon?
Any day now is the last time.
Okay, so it's like real current. That's kind of where I'm headed. So that picture is new information, current data that we've got in front of us. And I tell you, I'm excited all about this. If we take that new information and apply that to this problem, i.e. somebody says the lots need to be bigger, and we create another zone or two to allow smaller square footage lots and larger, seems like we've really got, maybe I'm missing something, but that feels really good at the moment.
No, what you guys are doing is you're working out your comp plan. Okay, so you're going to, next meeting, it sounds like we just need to run these parallel, you're going to talk about your zoning map.
Yeah.
And you're going to start looking at all that yellow area and trying to decide where does it make sense that maybe you have lower densities, larger lots, where does it make sense that maybe you adjust your density up if that's what you choose. That, though, is a year-long process because of the way that the state allows us to amend our comp plans.
So this?
This actually is, no, this just requires public hearing. Yeah, a code amendment just requires Planning Commission recommendation based on a public hearing and then council approval. This is what today's regulations are. So between now and that time you adopt your new comp plan, you got to create the rules of the game for the people that are investing. And that's what you're doing with this.
So let me ask you this. Devil's advocate story. If the council's saying we got a problem, we come back to them and say, okay, and we're going to solve it as we go through the comp plan amendment. And the footnote is we're paying attention to the new FEMA map. And we are probably going to create couple different new zones, stop this emergency order BS.
My read is that they're going to come back and that there is probably something that they're concerned that is going to vest before that process is done, that has actually led to this.
Well, I think there's not one in particular. I think what they saw was growth. Growth was happening. They took a look at it, and they thought it was a little denser than they felt they wanted. So they adjusted. Okay, so now, meanwhile, you're going to be doing the comp plan process.
They ordered the Porsche, and when they drove it, it wasn't what they wanted. So now they want to send it back.
Right, yeah, I mean, like any business plan, your comp plan is your city business plan in a way, right? You create a plan that you abide by, but... like any business plan, you got to evolve. So that's what's happening. You're seeing some changes that now is prompting questions. You're being asked those questions. If you feel like your bulk and dimensional is good the way it is, that's your recommendation. If somebody else feels differently, that's where you guys are going to ultimately have to get to a conclusion as a planning commission.
So if you look out over the next year, as we deal, start delving into the comp plan,
mm-hmm.
How much do you see us being doing redundant work as it relates to this order?
It's only in your, I think it's redundant in your mind because you sat through this process 2 years ago
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah. So, yes, you're doing that process again, but it's based on a response of growth. And whether you feel that growth is in line, or the, if your sentiment is different than the council's or the same, is I think the question they're asking. They feel like larger lots at 4 dwelling units per acre is what they desire, you know. And that's right now what will be in place until we get a conclusion from you guys and it goes up the chain to council and these become permanent regulations.
No, I was referring back to the comp plan review that we're doing.
Oh.
How much of this comp plan review is redundant to what we're going to be going through as we address this?
Oh, I see it as the same. You guys would have, this would have come out through the comp plan process.
So, said another way.
Yeah.
Is there really a downside to the future of the city to not deal with this emergency order and deal with it in its normal course under the way that we're going to deal with the complaint? We've heard the stories. We've heard the announcement.
Timing.
Well, hang on. I'm just trying to get. I want to get over myself on this. if my rub is that it's work that we're going to do in a normal process. And if someone had come to us and said, hey, guys, as a group, planning commission, this is a problem. City council comes in. Thank you for coming, by the way, the first time in 3 years. Thank you for telling us about it. We're going to pay attention to this particular detail as we go through the comp plan amendment. I'm wondering why that can't just happen.
I think the concern is...
The city doesn't want anybody vetting any properties at this point until the remainder of the comp plan to be updated.
No, because that would be a moratorium.
Yeah.
A moratorium is not in place. People can vest. They can submit an application and they can build a development based on the standards in this interim ordinance. Okay? So the concern that I heard from them was we saw a large influx of applications. We don't know how many are on the verge of coming in or not. But what they felt is a need to address the lot sizes before more of those, because I think we have 575 or 535, something like that.
That was my point.
Yeah, okay.
There's no change in that, right?
Then they stopped that. And from going on this emergency order, they stopped that process on the current.
535, is there some impact to them, to the number that you just gave me?
No, that's how many lots are in process right now that are vested lots.
This doesn't change anything.
Approximately.
Of those.
No.
It's right. A future. It's a future.
So timeline, my guess is, depending on production, right, it's probably this will impact somebody thinking about building in 2070.
You can build it about 2 years ahead of the curve on this.
Yeah.
Right, John? You're about 2 years ahead of the curve in terms of your breaking ground. So if we have 2 years to go before we have the comp plan revised, it looks to me like the city's trying to step in front of that process and stop it now before it's, and by its time to get the lot size figured out.
They've solved, the council has provided new lot sizes.
Yeah.
Okay, that is what's in place now. Okay, so now your comp plan is you're going to evaluate your comp plan, kind of, you know, and determine how you want to go about it. Then we're going to approve that next May-ish. The process that usually happens, this is, you know, codes get amended all the time throughout the year. This is not unusual. Process might have been different than because it was through this emergency ordinance. But normally your comp plan sets the goals and policies. Then you create regulations from those goals and policies. Okay. So typically, when you're done with your comp plan amendment process, the year to 2 years following that is creating the regulations to support the goals and policies that you created. So regardless of what happens with here, come May next year, we're going to update the code to support all the changes that you make in your comp plan. That will be your next step. So it you know, it's...
Back to our changes.
What would it look like? You know, would it look more rural to have the front setback further than 20 feet?
you're swinging an old Chevy.
You know, rural, you really, North Bend proper is a city now.
Is what?
Is a city. And so the land that looks rural was developed as unincorporated King County. So as I'll be honest with you, I've been kind of thinking about this. So I'm driving down 140th, and I'm looking at what is rural. And I'm seeing a car repair shop next to a mobile home, next to a beautiful home. So boom, boom, boom. Okay? Kind of that hodgepodge is rural to me, okay? What else is rural is as I drive down Maloney Grove and I see the large, big trees that are built or that are growing out of the side of the road, basically. And there's a feeling of character on that street versus driving down Renton Highlands, okay? Renton Highlands doesn't have open space. It doesn't have any big trees. It has one home after another, no shared spaces. And everybody's front yards look the same. So to me, rural is character, but it's not necessarily North Bend proper, the downtown. This is a small town. This isn't rural. So in a way, I mean, for me, I think your term that I hear rural all the time. What I think is it's a small town. You want to be a small town. What does a small town have? It has character. How do you get that?
You have to put your refrigerator in front porch.
Yeah.
Unless you need one there.
So I think what you need to do is, I mean, you're doing a good job. You're thinking about your lot sizes, your lot widths. You think about strategic ways to keep, some nice trees in your lower valley because, we have tons in the hills. But, one thing I like about Cedar Falls, and I think that neighborhood's landscaping with the biochannels, the significant trees that were saved, actually is far beyond any neighborhood that I've seen built outside of North Bend. So like I drive through some of the other neighborhoods, even Kirtland, you don't see that kind of landscaping because of some of the stormwater changes and things. And I think that's going to mature over time, and that neighborhood's going to grow into itself and really be less intrusive. It was just the first. Okay. John's subdivision with his big park and all those homes facing that park, to me that is a newer version of a more community-oriented small-town vibe.
John, is Forrester Woods suburban?
Forrester Woods?
He built Forrester Woods.
That zoning was 9600 when we built it.
Yeah.
And those lots are 75 feet wide average, I think. I think, the building setback, my perception of one of the big issues with that 10-foot front yard setback is when you build those alley houses and you get a row of 30 of them that are 10-foot setback, it looks like one giant apartment building.
Looks like brownstone.
With very little modulation going on there. And I think the modulation is a really important component of it. Having front of the houses forward and back, one of the things that we do, you'll see in both Tannerwood and Maloney Grove, it's subtle, but you drive in, you don't know what it is, but you see the front of all of our houses. It's because our lot lines are at a 15-degree angle. So instead of seeing the front only when you're in front of the house, you see the front of a whole row of houses. And then it's really important to have the flexibility to have some of those homes set back at 10 feet because we have some of our product is side load garage. And the side load garage has the garage coming up to almost the street. The only way to make that, if you make the front yard set back 20 feet, and the front of the garage has to be that far back, but it's a side load garage, the back of the house is 90 feet back. We can't build the house. It doesn't work.
So John makes it.
Can there be something different for that side garage versus the rest of the garage? And why I'm thinking of that, because if you have less of a setback, then you don't have as much driveway parking, which means you have to have on-street parking. And so then you lose more land that way.
We have minimum.
It's an L garage, right? So the
I know what you're saying.
So you got a bunch of parking because it's not the garage door that's 10 feet off. It's
it's the side wall of the garage. So you actually drive by and in.
Yeah, and I'm asking if we can make an allowance for that difference of the...
Yeah. What I would recommend, because, you know, I think what was necessary is to talk about where you guys are. And I think now what we need to do is bring you some ideas. Because there's, John's making a lot of good points that we're dealing with all the time. Whether it's side load, usually side loads do allow a little closer to the road because you do that. There's a lot of other little strategies we can play with. Like, for example, right now we have that modulation of the front yard setback to try and break up that look of a row of houses. If we allow for more modulation and we actually get that, you'll get a little more of that breakup. So I think what we need, if you guys are ready, what we could do as staff is bring you back some proposed adjustments based on what we've heard for you guys to evaluate. Because you're going to have to start putting together recommendations. So what I'm offering is to help by providing a starting point. And what I'm hearing is Gary wants a little larger lot.
I want it all.
You're kind of happy where we were, but you're willing to look into the different standards. I think you appear to like the larger lot, so you're looking for a little more elbow room in that 4-to-1 unit per acre. So now it's about how do we provide all that, and I haven't, you know, I'm still getting to know you. So how do we provide all that while we allowing enough flexibility, because what we don't want to do is hinder architectural design. And that's what we can bring to you guys as strategies where you can allow great architecture by having the right flexibility in your standards.
Well, I'd sure like us to avoid putting ourselves in a position where we're having to grant building permits to the kind of homes that Seattle's dealing with, those very narrow 3-story units that are totally out of character with the community, but somehow they're allowed because of density fills and this kind of thing. We don't want to have undersized lots that allow that kind of development that
right.
just really does change the character of the neighborhood entirely.
Yeah.
So our next meeting is August 14th, and we're supposed to bring back the comp plan as well as this regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a vacation on August 28th, and then our public hearing set for September 11th.
Right.
Did you say the city council hasn't... public hearings, though,
or? Yeah, the city council has to address their interim ordinance. So the planning commission's process is different. So
have they scheduled a public hearing?
It's August 19th.
This is what we got our last meeting.
So there'll be a public hearing on the regs that they adopted, and then the planning commission will hold a public hearing to hear input so they can come to a conclusion on their recommendation. For the, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
There are really two issues that technically I just wanted to make sure I expressed. One was that building setback and modulation issue that I already expressed. The other one's on the side yard setbacks. 8 and 8 is just this kind of bizarre combination of numbers that we would have a very difficult time dealing with. Bellevue, Kirkland, Mercer Island, a lot of the other places we deal with is 15 total. So it's 7.5 and 7.5. It's any combination, not less than 5, and total of 15. So it's typically 5 on one side and 10 on the other side. That gives you, you know, 10 feet gives you a pretty good space between your fence if you have one in the house.
So John, would that be 5 on one side and 10 on the other side, so you still have 15? Or is
yeah, right, right. It's total of 15.
Between any two homes.
And then it's,
there was, if I had 5 on one side, then my neighbor would have 10.
Yeah.
Which would be 15 between
right.
two.
Right, I think that's right.
So
well, it could be 5 and 5, depending on. But
well, that's what I'm talking against that. And I would say,
yeah.
If we're talking about 15, then it would be 10 on one side, 5 on the other, and then on the other side, it might be 10 and 5 by the other guy.
So, yeah, I see what you're saying. It shouldn't be an equal 10-10 or 15-15 all around. It could be 10 and 5 and then 10 and then 5. Yeah, that's what you're explaining? So you vary, one person has a little bit wider, one's a little narrower.
Yeah, it's any combination of, it gives you flexibility.
Well,
it's 15 total, not less than five. And so you could have five on one side, 10 on the other. You'd have 7.5 on both sides.
Yeah. I think what you want to be careful, though, is if say, this guy gets the five-footer, that forces the guy next door to have a 10-footer.
Yeah.
So.
You got the same thing all the way down. Yeah.
Right, then you're creating.
But he has 10 on his other side.
Well, you have five on the other side. But what you're creating now is you're creating more of that cookie cutter look. And in older neighborhoods, as they age, now say this guy who has five looks over and he's got a neighbor with, or 10, has a neighbor with five, and he wants to do a bump out or something, he's stuck because his neighbor got, you know, the five, and so it...
A bump out.
A bit of window, or, you know.
I don't even know what a bump out is. I'm buying a house. I don't know what a bump out.
An addition.
I know that if I have 10 feet, I can have a sidewalk going in my backyard.
Yeah, I'm just saying that somebody, as they come in and they want to build an addition, like the person we sat down with today, and they have 10 feet on their side, and we tell them no, even though the person right next door has five, they're not, that doesn't feel right to them. So that's the one thing to be careful on that one. I don't have an opinion on that. I'm just giving you the reality of administering the code.
I hear you. Stuff that the other piece I want to throw in the mix, and I hope to remember bringing it up again. The older neighborhoods, pick anyone you want. Most of them have larger lots than we are talking about right now.
Smaller homes, too.
So evolution of things. The next thing that's probably going to happen, if you look back at maybe a 10-year scale, new construction, smaller lots, because that's the price, the way it works. The people who bought that house are going to maybe move up to the next thing, maybe a bigger lot. And then the third interval, that same couple, family, will say, gee, why don't we tear down that house that was built in 1950 that has a 3/4 acre lot that's a block from the city. It's the dance, right? So don't forget that inventory as we start talking about the next thing for the city, because there's a whole lot of options.
We got our historic district, too, to put on the map.
Yeah.
So you can...
Yeah. Anyway.
Control it. I think.
The historic district's only the commercial.
Just saying, land use is open.
Lots of options.
Yeah, but you're official, recognized by the county, and regulated by the Secretary of Interiors is, the commercial.
The dance is slow in there.
All right. Any asks for staff for the next meeting?
I like your offer accepted.
Okay.
Ideas.
We'll bring some ideas to you, and we'll discuss those, and then you guys can give us direction from there to bring to the meeting that would be your public hearing meeting.
What am I reading about demolition of certain properties in the downtown core? What's that about?
The city's demoing the buildings over here, as kind of a settlement. I think the couple of the structures are still there.
It's under the nuisance law, right?
It was actually a negotiated, cleanup. We were having a lot of homeless population in there, in that area. So we did work with the Glazers to demo those and clean those up. And then we're going to create a temporary parking lot until a later date that there's a land use.
I think it's all necessary.
Proposed, yeah.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a fire hazard.
Mm-hmm. You ever been in a store?
So one thing I'm not sure is if you could bring us something related to the parks requirements, or have that for us in email for LDR.
Especially the part where we have to pay. Move.
Yeah.
Only if you don't provide park, John. You can always put a park in.
So this may be too much to ask, but as we get into this, because it's something I'm paying attention to, as I try to point out, every time we change the dimensions of what a lot is, there's a exponential change, high or down, high or low, in the value or the sale price of that thing that somebody's going to live in. So I'm always thinking about that, because you start, people say, oh, let's have a 9,000 square foot lot. That house just went a lot more expensive. It's not just the land value, it's the carry cost, the construction cost, the whole thing that gets amplified.
Right.
Totally changed the dynamics of who can live there.
What kind of impact would it have on the homes, for example, in the Silver Creek area, which I know well, that are still on septic and setbacks required by that for that, if we start going in and say having them in the same, where they would be, let's have these new setbacks that would apply? Particularly if a house came down, I mean, I think about total fire loss, and if they're going in and having to rebuild from the ground up, what kind of impact is that going to have? If we have these new setbacks.
Well, it would impact the size of home that they could, the footprint that would be yielded out of any particular existing lot.
Mm-hmm.
Silver Creek is interesting because the only event that you could rebuild is through catastrophic disaster without sewer, because there is no sewer there and the city requires sewer.
So they'd have to bring in sewer?
For any kind of demo. Mm-hmm. I think there's an allowance if it burns down that you could rebuild. I'd have to check the sewer banks on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Silver Creek does need sewer. But sewer is now going to be brought closer, which is through the development that's happening there. I mean, that's how incremental growth happens. It just keeps inching along. But.
So you got to come back next time?
Of course. Of course.
Okay, well, we'll bring in some starting points.
My other thought is, what would we need for creating a new zone? And if I need to meet with you and get some thoughts down, and that way we can have something to work with.
Zones, maybe more than one.
Mm-hmm. Because you do, there are very distinct areas already in the existing city.
Yeah, that's going to be through our comp plan process. And we actually embarked on that. We had two workshops where we started talking about the zoning. So we're going to re-engage that conversation. Go from there. That'll be a good conversation.
Any other asks?
No. Thank you.
Good of the order. I have two things. One, I attended the open government training this past week. You were all, as planning commissioners, required to take the training.
Thank you for going on our behalf.
No, you are required by state law. So I don't know when Susie gets back if she'll be contacting people, or they can. You can also do the online training.
Yeah.
Certify for that. It's a nice 45 minutes.
Yeah, thanks for going, Gary.
Other than that, thank you, Elizabeth, again for volunteering your time. And Jim.
Gary, thank you for volunteering your time.
And what we're going to do, we're going to try to get Dick and Elizabeth and Curtis together. Maybe, I was thinking it would be better to do it all three together and kind of just give you orientation. You kind of got, you know, you're actually far more up to speed than the average just because of your business and
sitting with my dad as they work through many of these processes when he's on council.
Yeah, so I'm going to probably email the three of you together and see if we can find one time, maybe just do lunch or something where the three of us can meet.
Just a question, does that create a problem with the quorum since it's three?
Oh, yeah, it does with the planning commission.
Sorry, it was also at the meeting.
Yeah, you're right.
As long as they're not going to discuss our business.
Yeah. Let me talk to her. I think we can do it for an orientation, but you're right. Typically, boards of this size don't have a three-person quorum, but you're right. Okay, funny. Well, we might have to do two in one.
All right.
Well, I think it's the duty of the new person to make a motion.
Motion.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.